This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Next up on our tour of the Invisible Institute is the podcast You Didn't See Nothing. It's part memoir, part true crime investigation of a 1997 hate crime and its aftermath. You know what? I can't describe it any better than the trailer, so let's listen to that.
My name is Johannes LaCour. And lately, I've been talking to a lot of people from my past.
What's up, brother?
I got a bottle, I got some chicken. You said bring a joint, so I brought some herbals. I've been talking about who I was in my 20s.
There's a lot that I don't know about you.
I mean, we all got complexities, but I definitely think that you're probably more complex than most.
And I've been talking about a thing that happened in 1997.
Just last week in Chicago, a 13-year-old boy riding his bike was brutally attacked for no other reason but the color of his skin.
I didn't know Lenard Clark, but he could have been my little brother. I was angry as hell. And then, almost overnight, news stories turned to racial reconciliation and forgiveness.
Well, let's forget about what happened to Lenard Clark. That's old news. Let's go to this racial healing baloney.
Never in the history of criminal justice in Chicago have victims and the accused victimizers come together to repent and forgive each other. Never.
This podcast is about how that happened.
A witness linked to Lenard Clark murder. Another one is missing.
I guess what happened was the Chicago way.
White folks know they can buy us by the pound. They know that.
And this podcast is about how it changed my life. Memory is a motherfucker. Environment is a motherfucker, man. I spent most of the last decade locked up on federal drug charges. And from those TV rooms in prison, it seemed like every other week, it's another black person dying at the hands of white folks. Every time, I thought of Lenard Clark.
You Didn't See Nothing is available wherever you get your podcasts. And earlier this year, it earned two of the most prestigious awards in journalism, the Pulitzer Prize for Audio and a Peabody Award. As we heard, it's the work of Johannes LaCour, who, in addition to being a storyteller, is also an artist and designer of ultra-luxury leather goods. I spoke with him back in June. Johannes, congratulations on the recognition. Welcome to the show.
Man, I appreciate it. Thank you. Good to be here.
What motivated you to revisit this 1997 Lenard Clark case for this podcast?
Well, it was just it was an important story. Obviously, you know, it stayed with me. And it stayed with me primarily because it was just unresolved. And it was still untold. And it was still happening, right? Like you heard in the trailer, like I'm watching black men, women, and children be beaten and worse by police and white citizens for years while I'm in prison. And we've been watching it happen. We've only seen the stories that have been shown to us. And I knew that this was a story that we hadn't seen when I saw Trayvon Martin, rest in peace, murdered. I thought of Lenard Clark, who, thank God, survived. But it made me think of Lenard Clark because, to me, that was like the Trayvon Martin case of Chicago prior to social media, you know, minus the outcome that was so tragic. We still have Lenard. And it was a story that needed to be told and had gone untold for too long.
You know, and maybe for people who might be listening now who weren't around back then or following the news back then, it was huge news. Like you had Bill Clinton in your trailer there talking about it. This was a 13-year-old who, with a buddy, they went to fill up their tires because the air was free in the white neighborhood of Bridgeport, not where they lived. And they're savagely beaten. How did you first come to get interested in this case, other than just as, you know, you were actually started working, writing about it at the time, not just following it in the news like so many of us did?
Oh, well, the morning after it happened, or the morning it had made the papers, my brother, Rahsaan Gordon, who's gone on to become an amazing attorney, also from South Side of Chicago, he called me that morning, like, bro, you know, they just left a 13-year-old Fidel Nakoma might not live in Bridgeport. And so, you know, he told me it happened in Bridgeport, and we realized he was beaten by a mob of Italians much older than him. You know, it was triggering, you know. And so, you know, being a 20-something in Chicago, our immediate reaction was an eye for an eye. You know, we wanted a pound of flesh. That just wasn't going to happen, though. You know, a car full of, you know, black 20-somethings riding through this all-white racist sundown of a town neighborhood. So that's when, you know, my focus shifted to writing to do something about it. And, you know, it was the things I found and things I started discovering that kept me hooked, because now it wasn't just so much about a crime. It wasn't just about this crime against this little boy. It was a crime against justice and truth. You know, I want to point out the fact that, you know, what reminds me a lot, what I think of when I'm listening to Sarah and Trina discuss their work, we don't have to do this work if police do theirs, right? You know, public safety and policing ain't working if the people don't feel safe. And if police aren't handling their business on the front end, journalists don't have to come around and clean up the narratives to show the public what's actually going on. So between, you know, police covering their own behinds because they don't want to be exposed for not caring enough about missing black women and girls in Chicago, to police being connected to, you know, would-be murderers and racists in a neighborhood like Bridgeport, trying to cover up those connections and cover up, you know, 40s Italian mob connected Bridgeport residents. You know, if they say what happened, there's no questions around, you know, what really happened to Nara Clark, who really did it, if the police are on their job. So, you know, to a large degree, you know, we are doing the work that the police should have long done.
One of the remarkable things about this story when it's happening in 1997 is, I mean, you described your outrage, your pain at this, that's so widespread, and yet there's this, the story kind of turns to this reconciliation, even among black community leaders at the time, church leaders. Talk about that, and, you know, how you perceive that in the moment, and what you uncovered about that in your investigation nowadays.
Right. So in the moment, you know, it was disgusting, and it's still disgusting. But in the moment, it was just, I'm there while it's happening. I'm watching the effects on the case. And so, but again, you know, if police do their job and make the public aware of who committed these crimes, you know, black so-called activists and leaders don't have the opportunity, or should I say, all right, so let me rewind for the listeners who don't understand. Lenora Clark is beaten savagely by a mob of what I believe was probably at least six young Bridgeport men with mob connections. Three are charged, and those three, the ringleader was a kid with mob ties that go back to Al Capone. His father was a mob guy with ties that went back to Capone. And so they actually have connections and relationships with police officers. So at the first narrative, you know, there's this question. And so what their power also enables them to do is recruit, you know, black folks who have some power themselves, or some influence at least, in the community. You know, when it first happens, folks are outraged. You know, you got black people marching and protesting and marching through Bridgeport, and they're angry as hell. And then, like, you know, then you start noticing in days, some of the same people leading these protests and marches are now suggesting that we forgive and forget, and that maybe it wasn't even them, and that we need to be thinking about racial healing. And it's like, wait a minute, like, you know, where did this shift come from, right? Well, something happened here. You know, it don't turn day to night without a sun going down somewhere. What happened? And so, you know, my investigation, I discovered that from sources that I couldn't name at the time, because they wanted to be off the record, because they were in fear of their own safety, that you know, the mob family connected to the lead attacker was paying off, you know, these black folks in the community, right? And so they started changing tune, and they started rationalizing to themselves like, well, you know, if these boys go to prison, all right, they're in prison, but what do we have? What does that really do for Lenard? But, you know, if we can get some money, you know, we can do something in our neighborhoods, you know, then we can get some more people some jobs, and now it's a win. Which I want to just point out is just another, you know, tragic nuance of being black in America, because you do, it does force you to ask, what does an arrest and a conviction really mean? It's not bringing, you know, when you know, it's it gets you closer to justice. It's the feel of justice. But if, you know, because George Zimmerman is still walking, so we're angry as hell. But if he goes to prison, it doesn't bring Trayvon back. And so that was the viewpoint, or at least a rationalization, of these black folks who started kind of, you know, kowtowing and selling out and buying in to the program.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking with Johannes LaCour about his podcast series, You Didn't See Nothing. It tells the story of Lenard Clark, a black 13-year-old who was beaten by a group of older white teens after he rode his bike into their Chicago neighborhood. It was recently honored with two of journalism's highest awards, a Peabody and a Pulitzer Prize. It's also the story of LaCour's own experience with the criminal justice system. As he talks about, he spent a decade in federal prison on drug charges. Johannes, was this always going to be a memoir to this project?
No, it wasn't. Initially, it was just going to be a long-form journalism piece, kind of revisiting the story. And we knew it was going to tell, like, it was going to be a Chicago story, right? It was going to be a period piece about, you know, about something that just had, about a story that had gone untold. And the Invisible Institute audio team, which, you know, I just want to give a huge shout out, Sarah Geis, Bill Healy, Rissa Apantaku, and Dana Brozos Kelleher. They had just come off of a hugely successful podcast called Somebody, for which they were nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. And so they'd gotten a formula. They put together this amazing audio team, and they discovered how to kill podcasts, kill it in a good way. Obviously.
Yeah, I got you.
and it was Jamie Calvin, who founded the Invisible Institute, who also just has an amazing eye for stories and structural components of stories, who suggested that this piece also be part memoir. And because it was what was really interesting to him, and obviously proved to be interesting to a lot of folks, was the view of someone who'd been incredibly concerned about this story, you know, 25 years ago, and then that view, how much it's changed or been altered 25 years later after being removed from society for 10 years, and I will say, you know, this kind of, it's partly an answer to your previous question. All of this time later, you know, my thoughts of, you know, at the time when black men and women were selling Lenard Clark out and, you know, taking these 30 pieces of silver to be quiet, I was enraged. And as far as I was concerned, they were sellouts and coons, and they were just as bad as the Italians who nearly killed Lenard. Looking back, I realized that, you know, they can't be absolved of responsibility and complicity, but they were victims themselves of a system that, you know, renders you, you know, so helpless and so destitute that those 30 pieces of silver are life changing. That's not to defend them. That's not to excuse it. Because shame on them, but it offers a different explanation.
Just a couple of minutes left in our time together. I wonder what sort of reaction you've gotten from people in your life, in your communities, about this work.
It's just never-ending praise, which I appreciate. It's humbling. I'm thankful. I thank God every morning that this story was able to reach people. I think that it's also, I think that the fact that, you know, it's that a Peabody and a Pulitzer have been awarded to the work of somebody coming from prison has been eye-opening for folks. I think that, you know, what we're doing at the Invisible Institute is highlighting not only the stories that ain't been told, but who should be telling them. So it's been amazing. It's been an amazing flood of praise and thanks for, you know, sharing some history that otherwise would have gone covered.
You know, just about a minute. I've got to ask, since we have that time, you also design sneakers, luxury bags. This is a skill I understand you picked up in prison, working with leather. Do those two interests of yours relate, you know, storytelling, designing?
Absolutely, because, you know, I'm telling a story with my shoes. My lead shoe is I picked up leather work in prison, and after I came home, I found a Chicago school of shoemaking and learned how to make shoes, primarily gym shoes, which we call them Chicago sneakers. And, you know, my flagship shoe, my signature shoe, if you will, is called the Redemption. I'm trying to tell stories with my designs and kind of speak on how I see the world through design. So it's abstract, but they're very much connected and appreciate it. And your people can find it at yjlshop.com. A shameless plug real quick.
It's all right. Johannes LeCour is a writer with the Invisible Institute. The podcast is called You Didn't See Nothing, as we heard, Peabody Award, Pulitzer Prize. It's a really good listen. Johannes, thank you so much for being with us today to share it with us.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Coming up after the break, one more story from the Invisible Institute, a collaboration with our producing station, Illinois Public Media. Plus, we'll talk with the Institute's director about their philosophy of collaboration in general. That's all coming up after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.